everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass. You are listening to It's All About Food. And today, I am going to be talking with Brenda Sanders. I had Brenda Sanders on the program about 4 years ago. We were talking about her Better Health, Better Life program. And she's been doing so many wonderful things since then. And we want to hear about it. Brenda Sanders is a vegan food justice activist, and we're going to hear about all the projects she's been involved with in the last 4 years. But most importantly, something new is happening called Veguary. Brenda, welcome to It's All About Food.
Thank you so much for having me on the show again.
Yeah, so I read about you a lot, and I always think, oh, I want to talk to Brenda again because she's just awesome. And I see you as someone who sees a problem and then just goes after it. And I don't know what goes on in your head dialogue, but I see you as someone who believes that you can just do it.
Yeah, I've always been that way. And, you know, people have always sort of been in awe of that. And just wondered, I remember years ago, when I was probably still in my teens, somebody literally asked me, like, what makes you think you can do that? And it was like an honest question. It was like, why do you think that you can do that? And I, you know, I honestly just didn't have an answer. I was like, cause I just think that I can.
Because you can.
Then I do. So,
yeah, well, I don't want to mess that up at all because it's a wonderful gift.
Thanks.
Somehow, we've got a lot of things to fix. We have a lot of things to improve on this planet.
Yes.
But I would like children to be raised to believe that they can. You know, just like Obama used to say, yes, we can.
Mm-hmm.
And that needs to be a dialogue, an inner dialogue all the time. Yes, we can. We can.
Absolutely.
I think we've heard a lot that we can't, and that has really stifled a lot of creativity and maybe put the brakes on some good work that needs to be done. But that's not you, and I want to celebrate you and talk about all the wonderful things that you've been doing. So when I last talked to you, you were doing Better Health, Better Life.
Right. Yeah. So Better Health, Better Life was the very first initiative. And it sort of has morphed into some other things since then, as I have grown and as I have evolved through this work and sort of learning more about just what's going on in the world and what the needs of my community are. And so through Better Health, Better Life, I was basically going out and doing these free plant-based cooking demos because I had learned about all the like huge health disparities that existed in my community, like the communities where I grew up, which are, you know, low-income Black communities, and just how staggering those numbers were. And I already had access to all this information about the health benefits of plant-based eating, and I had grown up watching all the adults around me get sick. And once I made the connection between the way that we eat and our health, I just felt like I needed to go out and do something about these disparities. And so I just sort of single-handedly started going around to anybody who would have me, you know, any community center, church, anywhere, people's homes, and just started to teach what I knew. And then as I grew and as I learned more about the needs that people had, I started to develop programs, like education programs, workshops, classes, things like that. I would bring in experts to talk about the different aspects of, you know, health and wellness and plant-based eating. And now I sort of just have so much going on and you know, well, a little bit less with the pandemic. But prior to that, there was just like so many things that I was working on, and just kind of this dynamic community that had been built. And so so a lot of that now has actually been sort of transitioned to the virtual world. Mm-hmm. But we still have quite a lot going on. So I'm excited about that.
Lovely. So now you're the executive director of Afro-Vegan Society.
Yes.
And I'm reading, it's a nonprofit organization that provides resources to people in marginalized communities to assist them in transitioning to veganism. And you have this new program. Have you done it before? February?
No. I have not, even attempted to do anything this huge. February was sort of the brainchild of, I work with a team of other women with Afro-Vegan Society, and we were just wondering, like, what can we do during Black History Month that will make an impact and sort of make a difference? And I mean, I've done smaller scale vegan pledges in the past, where we maybe get together once a week and maybe have a presentation or something. But I mean, 28 days straight of just programming and resources and, I have never embarked on anything this big before. So it's pretty exciting. It's been a lot of work and just putting it together. And it's just going to be the most amazing program.
Well, February is probably the best month because it's the shortest month.
Right. Well, I mean, thank goodness. No.
For you. Yeah, just kidding. So I just want to say that I believe in a universal consciousness where we all put things out to the universe, and that's how we can advance, and that's how we can also move backwards, depending on what everybody's putting out in that bank somewhere. And I felt the veduary. I felt it. We were talking 2 weeks ago on this program, 2 or 3 weeks ago, about Veganuary. Mm-hmm. And that's been going on since about 5 years now, 6 years, and very, very popular. And yes, my partner Gary and I were talking about it on the program, saying, well, what about February? And we started just improvising, brainstorming names, and we came up, after a bunch of ridiculous names, Veduary. And then shortly after that, I read that you were doing Veduary. So my mind was blown. It was just like I heard you.
Just picked it up out of the ether.
Yeah. I've never talked about Veduary before. So
that's so interesting.
I believe in Veduary.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much.
The other thing about a pledge is, I think it was in the 90s when I worked for an organization called EarthSave, we had something called the Veg Pledge. And it was an ongoing thing. And we didn't really provide the support that is so important to keep somebody going in a pledge like this. So I really understand the work because we weren't doing it.
Yeah, we had to learn. We had to learn, and it was through that feedback that we got from people, that I've gotten from people over the years, because I reach out and I say, what could we do better? What do we do right? And what could we change? People, it's not that folks are so much afraid of embarking on something new. For a lot of people, that's actually exciting, but it's like in the thick of it. When they may be getting negative feedback from family or, friends or coworkers, or if not that, then just all these influences coming in that are, interrupting their resolve to do this. It's very helpful for them. And we've gotten this feedback over and over again, that to just have a sense of community and, to have, access to information consistently, like, over the course of the whole pledge, that sort of refocuses you and regrounds you in your mm-hmm. commitment. And so that's what we wanted to do.
The thing that I learned was, when someone signs up for a pledge or posts something on Facebook that they're going to do something, whatever it is, it's a commitment, and it's like a kick in the butt. It's extra motivation. It's incentive. And when you sign something, maybe not manually sign something, but digitally sign something, whatever, or post it, it's, you're committed and it helps you stick to it. And that's why these pledges are important.
Yes. Yes. It makes it more real than if it's just in your head. Yeah. You know, like a decision that you made in your head. It's
because somebody else knows and keeps you accountable.
Exactly.
And somehow that matters to us because we are meant to be in community.
Yes.
Okay. So what can people expect during the 28 days?
So we have a few points of connection that we've set up for folks. For people who are really into social media, we'll of course be broadcasting through all of our different social media platforms. We'll be putting out information. We're going to be highlighting a Black vegan trailblazer every single day of February, you know, historical through today. And so that's really, really exciting. And just doing that research has been eye-opening for me. There's lots of stuff that I just didn't know about the history of, you know, plant-based eating and just oneness with everything. Like there's all these different components to veganism that have existed in our community that we just didn't know about. And so we'll be highlighting those kinds of things every single day. For folks who aren't so much into social media, we'll have our online website platform where we'll be engaging with people every single day. So there will be videos, there'll be you know, talks and panel discussions and all kinds of just great stuff every single day. And then we're sending out emails where we engage people in that way and give lots of encouragement and inspiration. So we're just gonna, people are going to be inundated with support and resources and education every single day. So our hope is that nobody will feel left behind and nobody will feel isolated through this process.
Beautiful. Well, I'm getting more into history these days. And the interesting thing about history is it depends on who's telling the story.
Absolutely.
So the history that I've grown up with hasn't necessarily been comprehensive. I'm trying to be diplomatic here. And so I'm learning and I'm horrified, of course, because this particular country has done some horrible things since it started.
Oh, yeah.
And so we're all talking about it now. And some people are hearing it and some people aren't. And we need to do more of that. So anything that promotes history, Black history, I'm going to be focusing more in February on that because it's really important. I was listening to the 1619 podcast by the New York Times and then the Nice White Parents podcast from the New York Times. And they just horrify me, make me sick to know that this is my history, our country's history. And I'm breathing better now that Joe Biden's president.
Oh, I'll tell you what. I think a lot of us are.
Yeah. And we have so much work to do. What you're doing is so critical and so important, and getting people back to eating right. Because at one point, generations ago, we were eating right.
Right.
All over the planet. Mm-hmm. And through all different kinds of reasons, some of them are pretty awful, we're not eating right. And it puts the blame on a lot of communities, and it's not their fault.
Yep.
And it just takes somebody to say, I can do this. That's what I love about you. Have people signed up already? Are you getting a good response?
Oh yeah, we have over 700 people who have registered. We're looking, because of folks like you, you know, lots of media, people have been reaching out, which has been amazing. I mean, this has never happened where a program, because, you know, usually most of our coverage is more local. And so, you know, now folks all over the country are interested in this program, and it's so humbling, and I'm so grateful to be getting this kind of attention, because, you know, the more people find out about it, the more people we can help. Mm-hmm. And so I've just been so grateful for the folks who have reached out and said, yeah, this sounds really interesting, tell me more. So, you know, 700 and counting, it's a rolling registration. Mm-hmm. So, you know, people are welcome to come in on day 27, day 28. You know, we just want to connect. Right. Sure. And so, and then all of this information, all of these, you know, 20 plus people, activists, just dynamic individuals who we are going to be speaking with and highlighting through panel discussions and talks and Q&As and interviews, all of that content will be made available, of course, once the pledge is over. So it'll just be out there.
Oh, good.
For anybody.
Very good. So you'll probably have over 1,000 this year.
Oh, I mean, that's our goal.
Yeah. And then maybe 10,000 next year.
Well, you know, I mean, this February is here to stay. So yeah. We plan to just keep expanding and keep growing every single year forever.
I think it's a really good fit for Black History Month.
Thank you.
It really is. Because health and nutrition is such an important part. I mean, I learned that when the slaves were freed in this country, they were given nothing.
Absolutely.
Nothing. Oh, people took away their lives, their livelihoods, their families, brought them here to work. And then
The slave owners were given money. The slave owners were given compensation for having to get rid of their, you know, enslaved humans. So right. Yeah, this country. And then
to hear about how they had no access to healthcare or really good healthcare. And I'm just so in awe now to see the amazing progress that has happened for the Black people on their own because of people like you saying, I can do this. I think it's incredible.
Oh, well,
really. And I think democracy is only as good as it is because of it, because of this work. And like I said, we have so much more to do.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. I try to just sort of, I had to end up just super focusing on what I can do, because at a certain point, a couple years ago, I just started to really expand. I don't know. I started to educate myself about lots of other stuff. And I mean, everything from like human trafficking to sweatshops to, I mean, I was just all over the place. And it just got to a point where I was like, I have to fix that. Oh, and I have to fix this. And oh, you know, and it just is impossible. You know, and thankfully there are people in all those different struggles and fights who are just as passionate as me, and you know, are determined to make a difference in whatever way that they can. But yeah, I had to like really, really focus on what I feel called to do. So
well, it's a good thing, because you could have really done some damage to yourself.
Oh, just even psychologically. Yeah. I mean, just yeah, it just started to get so heavy.
Yeah,
because it almost felt like it never, ever, ever ends. There's no bottom to like the horrible things that are going on the planet right now.
Yeah.
And so that just became so dark, and it was such a dark time for me. There was a whole 6 month period where I felt like maybe I just had to stop altogether. Mm-hmm. Because I just felt so crushed and like, so hollowed out from just knowing so much. Yeah. And so I had to like sort of pull back and pull myself back in a bit.
You are not alone.
Yeah.
You are not alone with that. And pulling back is important, especially pulling back on history, which I have to remind myself to do all the time, and say, we have really gotten better.
Yeah.
And things have.
We have, yeah. Yeah. In a lot of ways, we have new problems that, you know, we never could have conceived of 100 years ago, you know, like the prison industrial complex, right? And so, you know, it's just kind of like one thing sort of got swapped out for another thing. So I think we need to be more mindful moving forward into the future of like, what are we creating right now? You know, what are we allowing to be created around us, you know, right now, and maybe head some things off that may have developed into something, you know, while we weren't paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, with new, you know, with the evolution of technology comes all these new opportunities for either, you know, good stuff or really bad stuff.
That's right. So, both directions.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, you were the co-creator of the Vegan Soul Fest.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about that? And is it going to continue?
Oh my goodness. So Vegan Soul Fest is the brainchild of Naja Wright Brown and myself. She, you know, is the owner of a very successful vegan bistro here in Baltimore, as well as the executive director of another organization called the Black Vegetarian Society of Maryland. And so she and I have very similar ideas. We have very similar goals. And so we kind of came together and we're like, well, what can we contribute together to our community that would help to disseminate this information on a large scale in a way that people will enjoy and want to come back year after year? Of course, a festival was the answer. I mean, everybody loves festivals. And so Vegan Soul Fest was born, and lots of people told us, like, don't do it, don't do it. Nobody's gonna, you know, go to that. Like, you know, why would you aim this kind of information at our community? You know, like, we won't, you know, we won't care about it. And that couldn't have been further from the truth. You know, we weren't able to do Vegan Soul Fest in 2020 for obvious reasons, but in 2019 we got 13,000 people who came out, and so it's like not a small deal, you know. and that was our seventh year. And so, you know, yes, we absolutely plan to bring Vegan Soul Fest back. We are keeping our ear to the ground, you know, with the city to sort of get a feel for when it will be safe to do it again. And in the meantime, we are brainstorming. We're connecting with other folks who can help us to take this, you know, humble festival to a whole other level. You know, I have like high expectations for Vegan Soul Fest to become like, you know, one of the quintessential festivals in the country. You know, one of the like most popular people coming from all over the country and all over the world. So we're trying to figure out how do we move into that space.
I want to say that I'm not happy about the coronavirus. Duh. But right. But it's really given a lot of us an opportunity to do some work that we put off and focus on things we really want to do and take this time to prepare. Prepare for when we can come out of our cocoons and fly out like butterflies and do some amazing things.
Absolutely.
So I have some gratitude for that.
Yeah, we were forced to slow down. And for a lot of us, I'm sure you can relate, that was really necessary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You also have the Greener Kitchen.
Yes.
And is that still going on with COVID?
Yeah. So, so the Greener Kitchen, deli. I never planned to get into like the food business or like the restaurant, but like that was just never a goal of mine. Every single thing, every project that I've started on has built on the last thing. And so in getting feedback from people, you know, initially it was just like, oh, we want to give people information. And then we would give people information and they would say, oh, but, you know, like we need something more practical. Like, you know, we need something more hands-on, like teach me how to do this. So then, you know, the workshops, the hands-on, you know, workshops and demos became a thing because it was like, okay, not only do people need information, but they need a more practical sort of interaction. So then we started doing that. And then at that point they were like, yeah, you know, this is all great, but we really don't have access to these foods. And that was heartbreaking because I know what that's like. I mean, I grew up you know, in the projects of Baltimore City, we were always food insecure my whole life. So mm-hmm. I've actually experienced real hunger, you know, and just the fear that there won't be food. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, reconnecting with people from the communities where I grew up and realizing like this hasn't changed. Like this same situation I grew up in and so many other kids grew up in is still the exact same. And so I got together with some folks who, you know, were just like plant-based chefs, just food, you know, people who were just lovers of food and cooking and preparing plant-based dishes. And I was like, let's make some vegan food that people can afford. Mm-hmm. And I mean, obviously there's like beans and rice and, you know, like canned veggies and stuff like that, that folks can afford. But, you know, some of the like substitutes, some of the things that sort of fill in for the things that you're giving up, they're completely inaccessible to low-income people. Mm-hmm. I mean, who with, you know, who's taking care of a family of three or a family of four or a family of five, you know, can pay $8 for a few burgers, mm-hmm. you know, like a few plant-based burgers that won't even feed their family. Mm-hmm. And so like where the plant-based food industry is just exploding, and it's a great thing for people who eat this way, who can afford all these amazing products. I mean, just the veggie shrimp and the this and the steak and the, you know, all mm-hmm. these things. And now the fast food restaurants even are carrying plant-based foods. For the folks living at the furthest margins of society, it's still completely inaccessible. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, we have to do something about this. Not only do we need to develop products that will fill in these gaps for people, but they have to be affordable. They have to be comparable with what mm-hmm. they're already eating. And so, you know, we just got into the kitchen and we started to just play around and with recipes and formulas, and we developed this whole line of plant-based products that it was just literally, we just wanted the people in Baltimore communities to have access to this food. That was the whole goal. So it was never like, oh, we want to be some national, you know, company. We want to be in every grocery store. No, we just wanted for people to be able to come and get, you know, some veggie grounds or, you know, some shaved steak or some soy cheese or, you know, whatever. And so we developed these products. They are, you know, the price point is right down around like, you know, Kraft and, you know, wow. It wasn't easy because we also had a commitment to making sure that the foods are healthy. Mm-hmm. So that was, wow. That was huge. Just making sure that it's not full of a lot of artificial ingredients, which are very cheap.
Sure.
And so we just had to sort of, you know, sort of walk the line between making sure that everything was affordable, but also making sure that it was healthy and nourishing for the body. And we did it. And it's just been, you know, we were just selling the stuff just whenever. So if we had an event, we would make sure we were fully stocked and people would just buy the stuff and they love the stuff. And then they just started demanding, like, we want this all the time. You know, like you only have events once or twice a month, but we want to be able to get this stuff weekly. And so they dragged me kicking and screaming into, you know, the food business. And so we opened up the Greener Kitchen, so we have like a hot food side where we actually make the cheesesteaks and the pulled barbecue and, you know, the fried chicken, you know, all these things, and people can come in and get it prepared. But we also, you know, sell the stuff that they can take home and cook for their family. And that's the stuff that's like super affordable. And, you know, just making sure that, you know, we're providing recipes, we're providing, you know, all these resources so that people can realistically start to transition these foods into their diets.
So I'm fascinated by this, and I'm wondering how do you do it? Because you have a space, right? Is there's rent? Is everybody volunteering to make this food? Sucks. Are you paying people?
Yeah, no, it's terrible.
Because that adds to the cost.
Yeah, no, the pandemic has been just such a blow to us. And so, you know, luckily, because we did have to shut down the retail side. But luckily we were also selling wholesale, like selling our products wholesale to restaurants all around Baltimore.
Wow.
Because they wanted, you know, these amazing vegan products. And so a lot of our products are the vegan option at restaurants all across Baltimore. And so when we did have to just sort of put the retail side on hiatus, the wholesale sales have kept us going. And no, it is not, I mean, I'm volunteering obviously, and I probably will forever. But you know, we do have employees where we're able to maintain our employees, you know, with doing the wholesale production. And we are actually getting into the process of doing a grand reopening. But this time we want to really expand the market. So we're not just going to be the Greener Kitchen Deli. We're going to be the Greener Kitchen Deli and market. Mm. And we want to have produce that's locally grown, you know, at urban farms around Baltimore City. We want to have, you know, locally made products by, you know, vegan artisans and folks who just want to sell their stuff locally. We want to make our space available for that. And we want to expand on the products that we currently make and make sure that, again, we're plugging in the holes where there's a need so that folks from the community or even from outside the community can come in, do all their grocery shopping at the Greener Kitchen, and then leave and have everything that they need. So that's pretty exciting.
It's very exciting. You said you don't envision it as something going national or big, or maybe you do somewhere inside, but it's important to know how big you can go, because when you get bigger, it becomes more complicated. But I hope many people see what you're doing and want to duplicate or replicate your model, because it's important in every community to have something like this. Locally grown food, vegan food, healthier plant meats and plant cheeses.
Yeah. It would be amazing. Everything that we do, we try to make reproducible. Because, and we don't know if we're going to be the ones to take it to the next city. But mm-hmm. we're hoping that somebody mm-hmm. will be able to look at the model that we create and then, reproduce that. And so we've tried to just, streamline everything that we do, do it in the way that makes the most sense, that is the least complicated. And then we're hoping that, and we're not, the thing is, everything we're doing is so local that people really don't know. Like it's always one of those situations where it's like, if you know, you know, but like so many people don't. And because I spend so much time doing the actual work, I'm not like out there being the face of this. I'm not out there like wheeling and dealing and, you know, like networking.
Yeah,
and
marketing.
And I've been told like you have to.
Yeah.
And so I've been thinking about that as well. Now that's definitely one of the things that I've had a chance to think about while on lockdown. It's just like, how can I do more of that? Because it's not in my nature.
No.
It's not in my nature to be out, you know, at the forefront. I'm more like a background worker, but it's just necessary.
Yeah. We talk a lot about marketing, and a lot of marketing is very evil.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like a bad connotation that goes with it.
Yeah.
And for the people that are doing good, or for artists that want to promote their work, they have to know how to market themselves. And it's a difficult thing, because the good folks, I think, are kind of humble about what they're doing and genuine about what they're doing and don't look at how much can I profit from this. And that's where the power and the evil kind of come in and make marketing kind of ugly. But this is the world we live in, and it's important to do some marketing. So yeah, I hope you get some help in that department.
Thank you. Thank you. Please. I would love some help and some folks to come in with some expertise mm-hmm. in that department.
Yeah. Well, as Veduary gets more popular, there'll be people that want to help and hopefully they can come and fill the gaps.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So one last question. I'm just curious. How did you get to be you? How did you learn about veganism? How did you get so smart and so inspired?
Well, it's been such a long, complicated, I don't know. So there were so many stages. I started out just trying to figure out who I was and why I existed, because I mean, I had a hard childhood. Mm-hmm. And it kind of got to a point where I was wondering, like, if the world is so bad, you know, because that was how I was seeing it, you know, through my own lens, then what is the point? Like, why should people have to go through so many terrible things? And so I was trying to find myself and just trying to figure out purpose, you know, what was my purpose in life. And I think that was the first part of the journey. I came across some information about like the sacred body and, you know, your body being a temple and being one with everything around you. And that sort of resonated with me for whatever reason. It wasn't anything I was raised with, but when I came across that information, it just felt right to me. And so I started to explore that. And that's sort of where the influences about veganism and like sort of plant-based eating and all those things came into play. And then I explored that for years before I came across this information from this study that was, and this was about 10 years ago. So I've been vegan for about 23 years. So I was already sort of living this life in isolation more so, because it was just like a choice that I was making, but nobody around me really got it. And so it was just something that I was doing and felt good about. And then I found out about this study done by Johns Hopkins that compared to communities in Baltimore. One was a affluent white community. The other one was a low-income Black community. And the two communities are basically side by side and just separated by a main road. And they studied the two to find out why there were these huge disparities in health outcomes. And the conclusion that they came to was it was the diets. And nobody was expecting that. They thought that all these other, you know, like factors would have come into play in a much bigger way, like, you know, economics and, you know, stress levels and all these things. And it really, really came out to what foods they had access to. And there was like a 20-year difference in life expectancy between people in these two communities. The ones in the affluent white community, of course, living 20 years longer. And when I found out about that, I had already been eating differently for a decade. And I thought, you know, I have to do something. I didn't have any other option. I had this information that could help other people, and I had to get it out there to as many people as possible. And so that's when I became an activist. Although, you know, I've always had that energy. I like staged a protest in kindergarten. So, but you know, but I like I wasn't. We had to share cubbies, but there were enough cubbies for all of us to have our own cubby. And so there was this whole row of unused cubbies, but we had to share and squish our stuff into, you know, in with another kid. And I just started to like organize the other kids and say, look, this doesn't make any sense. It's not fair. And so, so yeah, I organized my first protest.
How did that go?
Your age of 5. Yeah. So it didn't work. Because adults are terrible, and it's a very oppressive system, you know, ageism is terrible, you know, in both directions, ageism is terrible. And so we didn't get what we wanted, but you know, that just that spirit was always there for as long as I can remember.
Right.
And I've always sort of gravitated towards people who were less fortunate, which, you know, for the longest time was pretty hard to find. You know, when I was so, you know, like my situation was so bad. So when things started to turn around for me, there was no other option but to always help people who are worse off. And so that's a big part of my activism as well. It's just recognizing that I have this privilege, the privilege of having information, even of having been exposed to new information that other people may not have access to unless I go and, you know, give them that information. So, yeah, I mean, it's been a long road. And I've learned so much and evolved so much through this process.
So, I'm glad you figured out what it was you were supposed to do.
Yes. Yes. It's a blessing. And, it's something that I'm really grateful for, because, you know, when I didn't have a purpose, that was a very miserable time in my life. And there's so many people who are miserable right now because they don't know where they fit. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I'm grateful for that.
All right. Well, I'm wishing you tremendous Viduary success.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I appreciate being on the show. This is great.
You're welcome. And I'm going to check it out. I may even sign up for Viduary.
Oh, please do. And we need, you know, all kinds of folks. I mean, even if somebody already knows a lot of the stuff, you know, that we're going to be teaching, just that encouragement for folks who are just starting out is going to be so, so helpful. So yeah, folks can go to afrovegansociety.org for more information.
Afrovegansociety.org. I will link that to this program. And Brenda, thank you. Thank you so much for making the time to talk to me and for being you.
Oh, it's been great. It's been great. I appreciate you.
Yeah. Okay. And one day I'll give you a hug.
Yes. Yes. When the world opens back up.
Oh, yes.
We can move around again. That would be awesome.
Yeah. Baltimore will be one of my first destinations. I've been wanting to go for a long time. I've been to Baltimore, but I had it on my list for the last few years to go back and haven't. And I will get there.
Well, there's some amazing vegan food waiting for you at the Greener Kitchen.
Yeah, I can't wait to try it.
Yes.
Do you deliver? Okay.
No, not that far.
Of course. All right. Take care. Be well. Be safe. Thank you, Brenda
so
Sanders.
Much.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
That was the awesome Brenda Sanders, everybody. And I hope you go to the AfroVeganSociety.org and sign up for Viduary. I did. And the first offering on the Viduary Facebook page is the Health Benefits of Plant-Based Eating panel from NAVCON, which was sometime in 2020, with Dr. Milton Mills, Dr. Baxter Montgomery, and Dr. Celeste Palmer. I haven't watched it yet, but I plan on doing it because there's supposed to be one thing every day, and I don't want to lose track. I don't want to get piled up with too many things to do. So I think I'm going to check that out tomorrow, along with whatever else they're adding, and just try and keep up for all 28 days of February's Viduary. I really have to think about it when I say Viduary. And who remembers when Gary and I were brainstorming about what comes after Veganuary in January? We came up with Viduary, and here it is. And speaking of here it is, Gary DiMattei,
hey,
here he is.
Hey, I'm back. Oh, I'm so happy to be back. I almost didn't make it. There's so much snow out there. It's coming into the Responsible Eating and Living headquarters. It's moving right through our office and coming into the studio with me.
Snow is everywhere. Woo!
Brenda Sanders, wow. That was a great interview.
Thank you, Gary.
I really enjoyed that. Brenda is awesome, as you said. Owner of the Greener Kitchen, which I can't wait to try when we're in Baltimore.
There's some good eating for vegans in Baltimore.
A lot of good eating in Baltimore. Yeah, so lots of snow and, you know, a constant complaint from me spewing from my chapped, weathered, and cracking lips this time of year is my detestation for the snow and anything that is related to winter, especially here on the East Coast. Winters can be, you have to admit, they can be harsh. Wind, ice, the smell of salt from garbage trucks converted to snowplows. I'm no one you want hunkered down with you in a snowstorm. I just freak out because I'm from California. But I just want to say that what happened yesterday made me, and I didn't think this was possible, not only fall in love with you for the 400 millionth time all over again, but it made me fall in love with the snow.
No, I don't believe
Yes! Because of you. Because you know what you did? And please don't sing it.
Please Would you don't. Like to build a snowman?
Oh, you sung it! Why? Why are you so cruel? Seriously. No, you sing it well. We went out to our terrace, which, as I said, is covered with snow, and you built a snow person.
Yes.
So amazing.
So much fun.
And I just watched you in awe because, again, from California, we didn't build many snow people unless we went to Tahoe to ski. And
when you're skiing, who wants to
who wants to build a snow people? But you are such a professional. You actually rolled the snowball into this big, giant ball like they do on the cartoons. It was crazy.
That's how you do it.
I never knew that.
And what's amazing is it's just like riding a bike. So I haven't done this.
In the snow?
I haven't done this in a long time, but I know how to make snow people, and you just roll the ball until it gets bigger and bigger. It was a little challenging because our terrace isn't too big, but...
But, you know, you could jump off the terrace now, and you would land in this big, giant fluff down there. There's so much snow.
Let's not try that.
No. Well, you know, I just want to say thank you for handling my aversion to winter. so wonderfully, and I apologize for not liking winter all those years back, but now because of your amazing snow sculpting abilities, I am now in love with winter here on the East Coast. I hope it snows for 90 days.
I don't believe you, but
it's true.
Sweet. Yeah,
it's true.
It's true. It's true. It's true.
And I bet there's snow in Baltimore too, right?
Probably. The other thing that I don't think is true is you don't get chapped lips. I'm the one who gets chapped lips.
Well, I was trying to be poetic.
Okay, and speaking of chapped lips, I just want to mention I cannot
live. Yeah, we have to talk about what's...
I cannot live without chapstick. And
what products you need for winter.
I use Soothing Touch.
Soothing Touch.
Soothing Touch. It's vegan. It's mostly organic.
You would think this is a commercial... But it's not. We get no kickbacks from Soothing Touch.
No, and I love it. And it comes in some tasty flavors. Right now, I'm using the pomegranate lip balm. And then I like the lime and coconut. They're really tasty. And they're saving my lips.
Yeah, so that's a vegan product. Because a lot of times, if you're trying to go vegan or plant-based, you don't want to buy any products that... are made with animal products.
Well, a lot of the chapsticks have beeswax.
Right, and that's kind of an area where we need to maybe bring it up again.
Sure.
A lot of products are made with beeswax, and for someone who is trying not to exploit animals or any living creature, beeswax should not.
Right. I didn't think I was going to talk about this, but here it is. Once again, these things just come up. And we talk about them.
Important.
Yeah.
I think.
So it's not as big an issue as the 60, 70 billion land animals that are tortured and abused, the cows and the chickens and the turkeys and the pigs. Okay, that's the biggest issue, and we want people to stop eating meat, and we want people to stop drinking cow's milk and goat's milk and animal milk in general. But there are other things like honey.
Yes, dear.
Like bees products.
Products from bees.
And this isn't as detrimental to the environment, but it is kind of cruel to the bees. I prefer not to use beeswax because I would prefer to leave all those bees alone and let them do their thing. Bzzz. Collect their honey, eat their honey, save their honey, do whatever they need to do with it. I'm not into that. And in the wintertime, especially, there's a lot of people who grow bees and exploit them for their products and then don't want to maintain them in the winter, and so they burn them.
Oh my gosh, you're kidding. That's just heartbreaking.
Yeah, there's Burt's Bees. They have a lot of chapstick products, and they use bees.
Right, so this is called, again, what is this?
This is called Soothing Tut. I'm loving it. There are lots of different vegan chapsticks, but I find that you have to buy them either online or in a store when you find them and buy a lot of them. Because right. You don't always find them. And then when your lips are chapped and you run into a health food store or somewhere, it's really hard to find a vegan chapstick.
I think that was necessary to discuss because I think that a lot of folks are going to be going out and buying some chapstick.
Oh, chapped lips are the worst.
Especially in winter, right?
Oh, the worst.
So anyway, that snow person you built yesterday cured me.
Oh, good.
Of my...
Do you want to build a snowman?
Oh, no, don't! No. There's got to be some royalty problem here if you keep singing that too.
Oh, that's true.
No, I'm kidding. Like they care.
Yeah.
Like they care. Care.
So it's February.
Yeah, February 2nd.
February 2nd.
And it's your dad's...
It's my dad's birthday. And my maternal grandmother was born on February 2nd,
too. That's a fabulous story. Your father passed away, oh gosh.
4 years ago.
4 years ago now.
Well, 3 years and a few months. Yeah,
right.
November 2017.
And today is his birthday. How old would he have been today?
93.
Hal Hartglass. Hal Hartglass. What a great man, Hal Hartglass.
You know, if he was alive today, he would be shoveling his driveway.
Yes. We talked about that. We don't even own a shovel here at Responsible Eating and Living Headquarters. We need to get one.
Well,
because the snow
I'm segueing here. So right. I'm talking about my dad, and he was always really good at shoveling the driveway. But they warn us, shoveling is a very physical and difficult activity and very hard on the heart. And it's Heart Health Month.
Right. Another brilliant segue, Karen.
Yeah. In addition to Black History Month, it's Heart Health Month. And right. Valentine's Day is coming up in the middle of the month. And when we talk about heart health, it's the same song. The best thing for a healthy heart, whole food plant diet, organic food, getting good rest, trying to minimize your stress and anxiety, which I know, folks, that's like the hardest thing right now in COVID times.
Yes, truly. You're absolutely right.
So
what are some of the things folks can do to keep their heart healthy? Adopt a plant-based diet. Also, in addition to that, exercise. But shoveling snow...
You can overdo it
right.
in a short amount of time. So you
need
have to be
work
really
your
careful.
Way up to shoveling snow. So,
right? Yeah.
It's not like the thing you want to do sitting around and then for the first snow, get up and say, well, now I'm going to go out there and get my exercise.
No.
Because that's
not a good idea.
A shock to your system.
Yeah.
Work your way up to it. Maybe around October, start working out a little bit each day. Maybe pull that snow shovel out and just use it to exercise with.
Just a moment about exercise. A lot of people aren't going to the gym. We're stuck at home. Some people are going to the gym now, but we've been exercising at home now for almost a year. So what exercises are you doing, Gary?
You know what? I do a 1-hour routine every day mixed with yoga. and ballet bar. Now, my version of a ballet bar is not the ballet bar that you would find on a YouTube. I do my own version of a ballet bar. And I do mountain climbers. Mountain climbers are, I find, a really wonderful...
They work a lot of the body, and it's cardio and strength and everything.
Right, and something that you like, it's a stress testing kind of exercise. Mm-hmm. I'm working really hard and then resting, and then working really hard and then resting, and then working really hard and then resting. It's good for your heart.
All exercises, yeah.
Because it's heart month.
I am into doing leg lunges, and I'm not even sure what the official name of all of these exercises are, but... I have my yoga mat, and I step forward with one leg, and the other leg goes to its knee. So the forward leg is perpendicular, and the other leg is on its knee, and then I stand up, and I use the opposite leg, and then I back up on my mat, and I continue to do them. And I did about, I do 30 or 40 pairs of these.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember learning how to do this a long time ago. It was with Doug Graham. Who knows Doug Graham, author of 80-10-10, the raw food guru? I was at some event and doing one of his routines, and we were doing these leg lunges across the floor in the room, and I was like, uh-oh.
They're difficult.
They're hard. So I like to do them.
But you're also a monster with sit-ups. You do a ton of sit-ups.
Yeah, I did... 75 today.
Wow.
But I did the kind where, how do you describe this? I didn't have my hands behind my head. I had my arms in front of me and my knees bent and going up like that. Really difficult.
We both work out every day, so I think we could handle shoveling some snow.
Well, fortunately, we don't have to.
I don't know. I went out and looked at that terrace.
Oh, you think we need to shovel snow on our terrace?
It might be kind of fun, actually. My real point here is I think we're going to have to dig out the car.
Oh, that's true.
And I think we're going to need a snow
something
shovel.
Something to
for
do that.
That,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for helping me build a snowman.
Yeah. Don't do that anymore.
Okay, everybody, I want to thank you for listening, and I hope you sign up for the Veguary. Even if you're a vegan already, just participate, and you'll learn a lot. And if you have any comments and questions, I love them. We love them. info@realmeals.org.
Next week, who do you have on the program, Karen?
Right. Next week, we're going to be talking about vanilla. I thought that was going to be this week, but I decided to move it to next week. I'm talking with the author, Rosa Abreu-Runkel.
We need to get some vanilla beans.
I've never worked with vanilla bean, only extract.
It's a lot of fun to play around with.
Yeah, so we'll have to get some of that.
Well, I'm looking forward to that interview, but I really enjoyed today's, and I'm looking forward to getting out to Baltimore and going over to Brenda Sanders' Greener Kitchen.
Very good. Well, thanks for joining us, everybody, and I hope you're staying warm if it's cold outside, and I hope you're staying cool if it's warm outside.
Ooh, where is it warm outside?
Yeah, it is in some places.
Really? Let's go there.
Okay, let's go there.
All right.
Hey, everybody.
Have a delicious week.